Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Job postings have begun to surge. It's not my word, but that's the one I keep reading. How can you position yourself to take advantage of that? And how can Gen Xers especially cope with the sandwich effect of being between the still alive and kicking baby boomers and the way alive and way kicking Gen Yers? Paul Forster will join us later to talk about those postings and what they mean from his perspective as co-founder of Indeed.com. It's a six-year-old website that aggregates job postings from all over the place, businesses, government agencies, banks, and high-tech industries, and many other places. But right now, we've invited author and workforce consultant Tamara Erickson to talk about some of the strategies she recommends in her new book, What's Next, Gen X, Keeping Up, Moving Ahead, and Getting the Career You Want. Welcome, Tammy, to the show.
Nice to be here, Ann. Thank you.
You've said that. Do you agree that it's a job posting surge, or how do you see it?
Well, surge might be a little strong, but yeah. I definitely see a very notable pickup in terms of companies' hiring patterns and in terms of their plans looking forward as I talk with executives. People are beginning to look for the next wave of growth.
Now, you've said that we have both a talent shortage and a high unemployment. What do you mean by that?
Well, it's a really interesting paradox, I think. The reality is we do have high unemployment that I think will probably remain for some period of time because the people who are out of work in many cases, certainly not all, but in many cases don't have the skills for the new jobs that are being created. So it's a mismatch between skills and job creation.
So how does a recession obscure that talent shortage, though? I mean,
well,
they have to fill those slots no matter what, don't they?
They do. And in fact, in the height of the recession last year, we actually had in the U.S. 3 million jobs that the government classifies as unfillable. In other words, they'd been open for a very long period of time without finding suitable candidates. So we had 13 million unemployed and 3 million unfillable jobs existing at the same time, and that's the skill mismatch.
You know, a lot of people have been, besides the folks that are unemployed, and I, you know, we obviously want to talk about that, but a lot of people feel trapped in their jobs because they are afraid that if they quit to go look for something else, they could get laid off right away from a new job, and then they would lose the security of the old job and that kind of a thing. And they're not getting the raises they want. They're not getting the notice and attention from their employers that they want. And you're saying that employers need to be aware of keeping their best talent for those future shortages.
Well, they really do. So many people are, I think, as you said, unhappy and just waiting for the moment where they feel more secure so that they can begin to look for something that they'll feel better about. But I think it's important for us all to remember that the idea of going back to a company where you feel safe, where you feel like you have a long-term commitment for employment is probably not a realistic expectation for almost anyone in almost any industry. I think all of us have to be prepared for the fact that with so many changes occurring, we have to stay sharp, keep our skills up, and be prepared to look for new things.
You know, the word for me that always kind of pops into my mind is portable.
Right, right. I really like that word as well. I mean, if you think about the relationship between companies and individuals over the past, I don't know, 100 or 50 years or something, we tended to have a mental model which said the employee would be very loyal, would never talk about leaving, et cetera, never give a hint they were thinking of leaving, and the company in turn would provide long-term care, pensions, health care, the promise of long-term employment. That whole equation has broken down. You know, it doesn't really make sense on either side anymore. And what I think the new equation can be is the employee will provide highly engaged effort while you're there. In other words, be tuned in and be really trying. And the company can provide opportunities to develop those portable skills. They can provide challenging work opportunities that will give you the skills you need if and when you're going to be moving on.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Tamara Erickson. She is author of What's Next, Gen X, Keeping Up, Moving Ahead, and Getting the Career You Want. Joining us in a little while will be Paul Forster, co-founder of Indeed.com. Tammy, let's talk about Gen Xers. What's their specific problem? Why the book devoted to them?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, they're about ready to take over in many, many senses. Boomers will be moving out of leadership positions over the years ahead, and they'll be taken over by Gen Xers. And I think most boomers don't have a very good sense of what Gen X is all about. So I think that was a bit of it, is to help Gen Xers understand the challenges ahead and how they can be most successful.
And in the same token, I mean, it helps the baby boomers who are, you know, at the upper echelons maybe understand Gen X better.
That's my hope. I have to admit, I'm a boomer, and when I began the research, I really was personally surprised. I mean, I almost literally said to my team when I got back from the first few interviews, "Where did we find these people?" You know, they just thought so differently from the way I did, and their career goals were so different than mine, and I just couldn't understand them. But as I did the research and got, you know, more deeply into the benefits and strengths of Gen X, I truly fell in love. I mean, I think the generation has so much to offer, and I'm such a strong supporter of Gen X and so enthusiastic about them taking on leadership roles.
You know, you talk about how they're kind of squished between the baby boomers and the Gen Yers, but hasn't the generation ahead always clung to their jobs? I mean, hasn't that always been the case? And hasn't there always been a younger generation coming up behind, you know, grasping and doing anything to get ahead?
Yeah, I'm sure that's true. But I do think the relative size of the generations makes some difference. And I also think kind of the willingness to play the game of the older generation probably influences the ease of the transition. You know, I would argue that boomers have pretty much played the traditionalist game. Mm-hmm. Boomers wanted to get ahead, were very competitive for good reasons. We grew up in a very crowded world. And so the rules that the traditionalists set down in the corporations, boomers more or less followed to the T. But Xers, although they've been forced to follow those rules to some extent, they don't want to lead in the same kind of way. They have very different views about leadership. And, I just think the transition may be a little trickier.
What do you love about them?
I love their tolerance for options and their tolerance for diversity of a view. I think that's really probably the major difference between boomers and Xers at a generalized level. And, you know, we should acknowledge that all of this is certainly a generalization. There are lots of people who are different within any generation.
Well, there's a big difference between the first wave of boomers and the last wave of boomers, too.
There is. There's a lot of variation over any kind of 15, 20-year spread. But in general, because boomers grew up in a very crowded world, one where there weren't even literally enough seats in the school for them mm-hmm. to all go to school, they had to go to school in huts out behind, mm-hmm. Boomers have grown up in a world where having your clear opinions, fighting for those opinions, that kind of ideological certainty, et cetera, is a really important element of being successful. Xers were a tiny cohort, kind of lost probably in those brand new schools that the towns had built. And they've been much more open to keeping options on the table in case something bad would happen. They're very much concerned about the ifs in life. They saw a lot of institutions change or fail or let them down in one way or another when they were younger. And so that idea of, you know, how do I keep multiple options in play and how do I listen to diverse points of view is something that I think Xers are really good at.
Now, what's the Gen Y? What's the distinction between them and the Gen Y generation? And what are we going to do when we run out of the alphabet? But answer the first question first.
Well, Gen Ys, I should say generations are heavily influenced by the nature of adult conversations, if you will, that are occurring when you're about 11 to 15. That's when you tend to form your major conceptual ideas, when you put all the pieces together to form your mental map of how things work. And if you think about what was happening over the last decade or so when our Gen Ys would have been 11 to 15, I think we would pretty much have to agree that the primary adult conversation centered around issues of terrorism. whether it was 9/11 or Columbine or Virginia Tech or the Iraq War fought for terrorism, et cetera, that's what we've been talking about. And that's the major conceptual idea that they've grown up in the middle of. Now, the interesting thing about terrorism, as opposed to, say, war, is that with war, a rational person would develop a reasonable understanding that something bad could happen if you went to war. But no rational person, I think, would have a reasonable expectation for something bad happening when you go to school. That's a random act, and that's fundamentally at the heart of terrorism. It's a random act, and inexplicable things happen randomly. In fact, if you listen to WISE, they often use that word. Oh, that was random.
Mm-hmm.
So that's their mental model. And if you imagine having a mental model in which unexpected things could happen at any point to anyone, I think a very logical conclusion for many people is, I better live fully today. I better live in the moment. And so WISE are very immediate. Now, we older folks look at that and we say they're impatient. But I would say impatience is our word. It's our spin on the behavior. And the more accurate behavior is they're simply living in the moment. They want to make sure every day is a good one, challenging, interesting, fun, meaningful, those kinds of things.
And gosh, when you put it that way, they sound wonderful.
Well, I actually am pretty fond. I think all the generations mm-hmm. have something wonderful to offer.
Yeah.
And I do think a lot of our challenge is to recognize the good things that we each can bring to bear.
There's an intimidation factor, it seems like, in our culture. It's always, you know, we're all under that weight of the greatest generation. We're never going to measure up. We're never going to be as good because they were the greatest generation. And I just wonder what Gen Xers feel here. You said they're taking over next and, you know, they're chopped liver. Is there a little bit of an inferiority complex because of all of that? Thank you.
Well, you know, there's a wonderful book by two authors named Strauss and Howe called Generations, in which they argue that the generations actually repeat every four generations, that there's a four-generational cycle. And their arguments are quite compelling. And if you agree with that, the WISE actually are our next greatest generation. The boomers are our idealists. The Xers are our pragmatists. The WISE are our civic generation, the one that is actually, you know, it corresponds to that greatest generation, the builders, the institutional creators, et cetera. And the one following that ends up becoming kind of the helper generation, supporting the greatest generation in achieving those goals.
We have to take a short break, and we'll return then with Tamara Erickson, author of What's Next, Gen X, Keeping Up, Moving Ahead, and Getting the Career You Want. And also joining us then will be Paul Forster. He is co-founder of Indeed.com. You can join us, too, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Questions or comments about finding a job. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
This is WOSU 820 NPR News, and at noon, Fresh Air will be here. Father Greg Boyle talks about his life with gang members in L.A. He's the founder of Homeboy Industries, which provides job training and counseling for former gang members, and has created businesses that employ former gang members. Boyle just had to lay off 300 people because Homeboy Industries couldn't meet payroll. That discussion on Fresh Air at noon, right here on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Support for WOSU comes from Westfield Insurance, exclusive sponsor of In the Know, where St. Charles meets Delaware Hayes in this season's final match on Friday at 8 p.m. on WOSU+. Westfield Insurance, sharing knowledge, building trust.
67 degrees in downtown Columbus at 11:20. Sunshine today and a high of 78 degrees. Clouds move in tonight, a low of 58. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues. This is WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about getting a job for the Gen X generation, sandwiched between the boomers and the Gen Ys. But I'm starting to just feel an empathy for all of them after talking with Tammy Erickson, author of What's Next, Gen X, Keeping Up, Moving Ahead, and Getting the Career You Want. And joining us now, Paul Forster. He is co-founder of Indeed.com. It's a six-year-old website that gathers job postings from all over the creation and businesses, government agencies, banks, high-tech industries, all sorts of stuff. Paul, thanks for joining us on the show.
Thank you for the invitation. Lovely to be with you.
Indeed.com reported a 19% overall increase in job postings in March versus March of last year. And, of course, that's 19% of not very much given the recession. But how do you rate this period of time now as we apparently are recovering?
Well, it's encouraging. As you say, it's been brutal over the last couple of years. But we are seeing quite a sharp turnaround. And in the last few months, job postings have really come back strongly. We track 12 major industries, and of those, all of them except one have shown a significant increase in the number of jobs advertised today compared with a year ago. So it's very encouraging.
Which is that one?
The one is healthcare, which is not necessarily the one you'd expect. The reason for that is that's a sector that didn't do badly during the recession. It actually held pretty constant throughout the recession and so therefore hasn't been in a position to bounce back. But the really cyclical industries, retail, transportation, hospitality, these have come back very strongly and they're up more than 40% over a year ago.
Now, there's a difference between job postings and employer hirings, though. There's a kind of a gap there or a lag
there
effect.
There is a lag, and for that reason, we think that job postings are a leading indicator. Obviously, jobs mm-hmm. are advertised prior to actually being filled. So compared with the government data, we're confident that the job posting data is a leading indicator and is a sign for things to come.
Tell us about regional differences, too. There's a big difference between the coasts and, say, Detroit, obviously.
Yeah, one of the things we track are the top 50 metro areas, the biggest 50 metro areas in the country. And we actually have a ranking on our site. We call it a job market competition. And what it shows is the number of job postings compared with unemployed people in the biggest 50 metro areas in the country. And it has some quite interesting results. One of the things, in terms of Ohio, it shows Cleveland ranked number 16 out of 50, and Columbus ranked number 28. So Cleveland's doing better than Columbus, as far as we can see from our data. Cleveland currently has one job posting per three unemployed people, and Columbus has one job posting per four unemployed people. So obviously it's a part of the country that's had to adapt to a large extent to economic restructuring. And however, we're seeing improvement in the entire state. And the cities, those major cities that I mentioned, are not suffering as badly as many others in the country.
Yeah, I mean, it's the feel-good moment time. I mean, that's 1 to 3 and 1 to 4, but what about, say, a Detroit or, you know, those are 1 to how many?
Detroit is definitely near the bottom. It's the third from bottom. It's mm-hmm. number 48, and it's 1 to 7.
Mm-hmm. Now, what, Tammy, when you're advising people, how does the issue of region come into play with your strategies? Because you hear about, now this, my strategy back in the olden days when I was job searching, you know, I got a copy of Editor and Publisher and looked for newspaper jobs. And it was that's what you did. But now, of course, you go online and there's a lot more choices. And it seems like younger people, maybe the Gen Xers, maybe the Gen Yers, like to think about, where do I want to live? Is it that easy?
Well, it is a big part of it, but it makes it more difficult. It's not easy. It actually complicates things. You know, I was mentioning before the break about the fact that we had 3 million unfillable jobs last year, I suspect, I don't have the data, but I suspect most of those were probably heavily influenced by location. In other words, somewhere in the United States, there was someone who had those skills, mm-hmm. but they didn't want to move. So people's kind of double criteria of both what they want to do and where they want to live makes it even trickier to find the right job.
Now, that's where a site like Indeed.com comes in, Paul. It was kind of cool. I went on there and immediately went to the $100,000 plus jobs because I work for a nonprofit. How many are there of those out there? But when people are using your site, what's the most common factor or combination of factors that they plug in looking for a job? Do you know?
Well, it's very simple with Indeed.com. You just put in keywords and location. So we have two fields on our homepage, two boxes, search boxes, and you just enter any keywords. And typically people put in job titles, their skills. Those are the main things that people put in. You can put in salary, and we actually estimate salaries for all the jobs in our index, and you can actually, as you mentioned, you can pull up all jobs that we estimate pay at least $100,000 or a lower salary, whatever salary you want. And location, and that's critical. Most people are looking for jobs in their local area, but if you are willing to relocate and able to relocate, you can specify any city or even a zip code and look for jobs that are within a certain distance from a specific zip code. One of the things we've seen in the market is that relocation has been more difficult because of the housing market problems, and that's something that has definitely created some friction recently, people being underwater with their mortgages, unable to relocate in the way that they used to be able to. So I think that's something else to think about, and I think that'll be improving over time as the housing market recovers.
Yeah, how do you figure stuff into your strategies, Tamara, when it comes to things like the housing market, which isn't going to go away soon?
Well, I think it means that you need to have perhaps a wider net in terms of the kinds of jobs that you'd enjoy doing. You know, one of the things that I recommend is for people to really try to understand the fundamental nature of what it is that they enjoy about the job and then see if there might not be others where it would translate. I'll give you an example. I actually started out in journalism, and I love the kind of hurly-burly of meeting deadlines and you know, then having some downtime after things had gone to publication and so forth. I like that up and down rhythm. And when I made the transition, initially it was into consulting, which has the same kind of pattern. It has deadlines and crises and slack periods and so forth. So I came to conclude that I really like the rhythm as much as anything else. And you need to understand that about yourself. What is it you really like about the job, and would there be others that might translate pretty well?
Well, that's part of the mystery is what other jobs are out there? How do you know what kind of jobs and where you would fit in and that what would feed your soul?
Now, I think that one of the things to look at is where there are pockets of growth in any industry. So if you can't relocate, if you have a particular set of skills and you can redeploy those skills in other areas, as we were talking about before, then are there industries that have fast-growing segments to them? So, for example, within energy mm-hmm. itself may not be growing very fast, but renewable energy is a segment that is growing fast. So that is one thing to look out for. And actually on Indeed.com, we have trends. We show the fastest rising trends on our job trends page, and you can see some of the areas where opportunities are actually exploding in certain pockets.
Tamara, do you find that people are pretty plugged into what they want to do and what they love to do and make that connection for themselves?
No, I'd say absolutely not. In fact, you know, if you look at statistics on people's enjoyment of their work, whether they're engaged, whether they kind of, you know, get really excited about coming to work, it's a very small percentage of people who do. I'd say 20-25% by most studies. So there's a large number of people out there who really aren't that excited about it. And, you know, there's nothing like a time like this to really, when you're going to have to look for a new job anyway, to really ask yourself, what would I get excited about doing?
Paul, as far as folks going onto your site, do you have a sense about how many of them are unemployed versus employed and just looking for a change?
one of the things to bear in mind is that there's a tremendous amount of churn in the job market. So government figures focused on the net changes in total number of jobs. So has there been an increase or decrease in total number of jobs? But that ignores a tremendous amount of churn. The average person changes jobs every 2 or 3 years, and therefore, even with a declining job market, there's still a tremendous number of opportunities to move jobs and to improve your or change your career. And because of that, the vast, vast majority of users on Indeed are in jobs and employed. And there is it's only a very small minority who are unemployed, obviously. That changes depending on the job market, and that's increased over the last couple of years. But the majority are in jobs already looking to make a change.
If you're just joining us, my guests are Paul Forster, co-founder of Indeed.com, and Tamara Erickson, author of What's Next, Gen X, Keeping Up, Moving Ahead, and Getting the Career You Want. Do you have any sense about the ages, Paul? I mean, what generation, I guess, is a better way to put it? Is it tend to be more Gen X? That what is it? Is that 30 to 45, Tamara, that age group?
Yeah, I even extended a little further, probably closer to 50. Kind of 30 to 50 is, I think, really at the Gen X.
I feel so much better. Okay, Paul.
It's certainly on our site, it's extremely broad. We have all types of people. We have worldwide now, we have 30 million users a month. In the U.S., we have 17 million. And so it really covers absolutely everybody and all ages and all kinds of careers.
Wow. I'm just wondering about how the whole social networking thing figures in and just the whole online thing figures into the dynamics of a job search now. It's so different than it was, just 10 years ago. Tamara? I mean, there's an isolation factor there that
I don't know. Would you describe it as isolation? I think it helps people tremendously. I mean, what it means from a company perspective is there's really no no place to hide anymore.
No, that's a good point. Yeah, I see what you mean.
Job seekers can find out just about anything, including, what it's really like to work there and all the dirt and so forth before they go in. So it puts a really, I think, important premium on the kind of image that you try to portray. It needs to be pretty accurate to what it's like to be there.
I guess I was sort of jumping around mentally there. When I was saying isolation, I was thinking about that going to an Indeed.com, which is really interesting and edifying whether you're looking for a job or not, by the way, Paul. But looking for a job somewhere, and it could be, a McDonald's in Portland. I don't know if they have them in Portland, but, it's so far away, it seems remote to me versus picking up the newspaper or, and looking at the want ads, which don't exist anymore for all intents and purposes. But
well, I think that you're right. You can look at jobs in any part of the country. The question is, how relevant is that to you? Majority of people are still looking for jobs locally and are not as mobile. Obviously, people who are more established have families and mortgages are less tend to be less mobile and tend to want to stay where they are. So it depends on the individual situation. I think that people are earlier in their careers are more mobile, and then it is interesting to look at jobs anywhere in the country. In terms of social networking, I think that to some extent it's not really taken off for job search. People are still a little private about their job search. And now that's not true, obviously, if you're coming out of college and it's your first job, or you're unemployed and you're not worried about anybody knowing you're looking for a job. But for the vast majority of people who are in jobs, they still see job search as to some extent a private activity. Mm-hmm. They don't want their employer to find out about the fact that they're looking for a different job. And so I think that limits the extent to which social networking can benefit job search. I think that's changing in certain contexts. People are, I think one of the ways it really can benefit is to research a company to find people you know at companies you're interested in working at, and you can use you can use Facebook or LinkedIn and find people you're connected to who can help you research a company, find out what it's like to work there, potentially find hiring managers. So it has its relevance, but it hasn't revolutionized job search and recruitment as some people might have anticipated.
Tamara, would you say it hasn't yet?
Well, a lot of it gets back to the kind of equation or that we were talking about before. In other words, as long as companies expect us to be loyal, as long as we kind of hold up that I would say myth that there's somehow an expectation that companies only want to hear that we're interested in them and not thinking about the next opportunity. Exactly that behavior is going to continue forward. It's going to be tough to openly talk about it. Now, what you find with Gen Ys is they don't buy into that myth in the first place, and so companies have been shocked to have, you know, Gen Ys open up easy discussions saying, what do you think I ought to do 6 months from now after I leave you? you know, what company do you think I should work for after I'm through working here? And so those discussions become more open and natural. But for most of us, we're still pretty deeply wedded into the etiquette that somehow it's highly inappropriate to hint that we would never, ever work here, that we wouldn't work here at some point.
You know, it's funny. The only time I ever did that, and I was too stupid to know what I was doing, I actually did get a promotion. And I was oblivious to it. We have an email from Crystal on Facebook, or I guess I shouldn't say email. We have a comment from Crystal on Facebook. She says, I really like what Tamara said about Gen Y being the next greatest generation. Of course, I've also heard that Gen Y is motivated by hearing positive feedback from others, so that might explain why I like that statement so much. Now, if only we'd get a chance to be great. I am lucky to have a job, but so many of my Gen Y friends have been searching for months, even years. I will definitely point them to Indeed.com as another resource. We have to take a break right now. If you'd like to join us, 614-292-8513, or you can email us on allsides@wosu.org. And as Crystal pointed out, you can also go to Facebook. Go to All Sides with Ann Fisher on Facebook and make your comment there. We'll find it and we will read it. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Amy Schatz of The Wall Street Journal about the battle between the telecom industry, internet companies, and the FCC over regulating internet traffic. Also, Father Greg Boyle. He has a new book about his 20 years working with L.A. gang members. His anti-gang program, Homeboy Industries, just had to lay off 300 workers. Join us.
Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes. It starts at noon right here on WOSU 820, NPR News. You are a continuous listener to WOSU, so be a continuous supporter by becoming a sustaining member today. As a sustaining member, your gift automatically renews, saving you and WOSU time and money. Give $20, $50, or $100 a month, and your sustaining membership will also help keep on-air fundraising to a minimum. Become a sustaining member today by going to wosu.org/sustain.
Support for WOSU comes from the Physicians Free Clinic and Voluntary Care Network, providing charity medical care for Central Ohio's uninsured patients. More about joining the Columbus Medical Association Foundation and supporting the clinic is at goodhealthcolumbus.org.
68 degrees in downtown Columbus, sunshine today and a high of 78 degrees. Clouds move in this evening, a low of 58. Some showers and maybe a thunderstorm for Friday and a high of 72 and a 50% chance of rain on Saturday, a high of 76. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on WOSU 820, NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Are you a Gen Xer and having a hard time finding a job? Want to switch jobs? Are you afraid? Do you feel that squishy feeling from having the baby boomers above you and the Gen Yers coming behind you? Give us a call, 614-292-8513. We'd love to hear your story, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org, or you can go to All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page. Tamara Erickson, author of What's Next, Gen X. How important is it to shoot for your dreams? Is that just impractical nowadays?
Oh, I don't think so. I may be an optimist, but I would hate to think that settling for something that's, you know, that you really don't enjoy is something that anyone would have to do. I know we do at times, but the reality is we spend so much of our lives at work that being able to do work that is in some way meaningful and gives back to us as human beings is a really important goal to keep in mind.
How much do you think the fact that people are in job, the people were shooting for the wrong job versus underemployment or something like that has to do with that such a huge percentage of people who are unsatisfied with their jobs?
Well, I'm sure there's part of it, that people, for whatever set of reasons, ended up doing something that they thought they should do or settling for something because it was the only thing available at the time. And those are practical realities. I would never deny those. I mean, we all take on jobs from time to time that we're not thrilled about, but we need it for the money, et cetera. But we have to keep in mind, you know, that should be a temporary situation, and we need to look for things that will give us more of internal satisfaction. It's really a win-win for the company and the individual. I mean, the reality is, I'm not going to do my best work for the company if I'm not engaged and enjoying it, and it's not good for me long-term.
614-292-8513, and joining us now is Araya Flynn. She is a Gen Xer. She's looking for a job, and she agreed to call us and talk to us about what her experience has been. Araya, thanks for joining us on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Tell us your story.
Well, it's kind of funny. I guess I was a collateral damage from the Mark Dan scandal.
That's a political scandal in Ohio, by the way, Tammy and Paul.
Sorry about that.
That's okay.
I was working as the executive assistant to the chief information officer at the time, and I didn't have anything to do with the scandal, got through it great, and when the next administration came in, I found myself dismissed as part of the transition. So they brought in their own leadership team, and I've been out there looking for work ever since.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. And I can say, honestly, I mean, while I've been looking for a job, I've also kind of looked for areas of passion. I got very involved in things that I'm very passionate about in life. And so I became a volunteer. I did a lot of volunteer work over the last year. I've worked with the Ohio Environmental Council, a local group called the Ohio Environmental Stewardship Alliance. I've worked with on a campaign against Issue 2, which was to try to stop a livestock care standards board that was established here in Ohio. And, I mean, so it's not like I've been sitting on my laurels doing nothing over the last year. This is all wonderful for my soul, mm-hmm. however. And my hope was that I would meet connections through all these activities that would get me in the door somewhere. But what I found is, I mean, I was earning a certain level. I own a condo. I have a car payment. I have other obligations that I take care of with my family that have kind of kept me in a place where I just haven't been willing to get my foot in the door for a certain level of money. And unfortunately, when it comes to nonprofit work, they're just, you know, I'm looking at jobs that are way below what my current income needs are. So getting that foot in the door didn't really work to the advantage that I was hoping it would.
Araya, you told me earlier that you have gone online, and I think you said you'd used Indeed.com. Tell us about what that's been like, and maybe Paul can address some of your concerns or answer some questions.
Okay, well, my experience has been I really appreciated having a source that had so many different employers available to me that I could apply for. And what I've found is that as I've applied for many of these jobs, I wasn't even getting selected for interview, which I've kind of attributed to other conversations that I've had. In some cases, when I followed up with HR departments, they're like, look, we've received over 100 applications, you know, and we've got much more qualified or experienced or what have you staff applying. So because of the economic situation. So what I found is that if everybody knows of these tools, that we're all competing for the same jobs. And unfortunately, in my case, I don't actually hold a degree. And I think part of it is just I'm being eliminated because I don't have a degree. I think that's been a barrier for me. I'm paramilitary. I'm a Desert Storm era veteran. I have 20 years working experience, and I have lots of education. I mean, I used my GI Bill up. I just did not actually achieve a degree. So I've gone back to school. I'm trying to at least get that so I don't get skimmed off as somebody who's not a qualified candidate because I don't, I'm not the creme de la creme without the degree.
Paul, what about that crowded room feeling?
I think that it's real. It's easier than ever to apply for jobs, and that makes it competitive. I think that one mistake that people make, and I'm not suggesting you've been making this mistake, but one mistake that many people make is to take a shotgun approach and spread yourself very thinly and not focus the job search. Because it's so easy to apply to jobs, it's very easy to just apply to many, many positions in different areas and just be too broad. Whereas if you can think about what skills and experience you have and how that can be translated into a job that you're going to love and where you're going to be able to add value to the employer, and think of ways to articulate that. So think about examples of things you've done in the past, responsibilities you've had or skills that you've deployed in the past, and how they're relevant to a specific company and a specific industry and a specific job, and try to explain that and try to network into the company as well as just applying to the job. Find people that work there or people who have an understanding of that company and can help you get a read on the culture of the company, the kind of skills they may be looking for, the kind of people that they may be looking for, and really get deep down into understanding the environment of the organization you're applying to, rather than just superficially throwing the resume out to many, many different places. Now, I'm not sure what process you've taken in doing your job search, but I think that being very targeted and focused and doing all these things as well, that in addition to the job search, finding out who's interviewing you, for example. So if you do get an interview, don't just pitch up at the interview and sit down and not know anything about the person that's interviewing you. Most people do that, but if you can go one step further and really understand the company and know something about the person that's interviewing you in advance, that'll give you an edge over other candidates, just to give you one example.
Tammy, right. Tammy, you give a lot of the same advice, that you get to know where you want to go.
I do. You know, a couple specific comments in this environment would be, it might even be possible to take Paul's advice a step further and make a proposal about creating a job. In other words, I was intrigued listening to your background with regard to environmental concerns and lobbying and so forth. There are a lot of companies out there who are really struggling for how to develop appropriate public policy, green postures, et cetera. And if there are some in your area that you can really come to understand what their issues might be and make a proposal to them, almost in a consulting sense, of kind of saying, here's something I think I could do for you, and you know, maybe even structure it that it would be initially on a contingent basis. You know, I would do this for you, and you know, with the understanding that if it goes well, you would then hire me after 6 months, or you would pay me a certain amount, et cetera. Things of that sort, where you can really hone in on the specifics of the company, I think are really key at this point. The other thing I would offer, and I know this may sound a little on the optimistic side, but the point is to be optimistic. I mean, one is, you know, I think people get a little distracted by the reality of the broad market. But if the more you can keep in mind that you're looking for one job for one person, and, you know, whatever's happening out there in the economy more broadly, you're looking for that one job that's right for you personally. And it's there somewhere. The other is that things are changing. And so the experience you've had over the past year or so is really horrible, but things are picking up. And so, you know, there's kind of, I think, a coaching to start afresh, start with hope afresh that things
are
going to be better.
I'm inclined to agree with you. I think that, like, as opposed to last year, I didn't get called for interviews. At least this year I'm getting calls for interviews, and I've had a few.
Great.
So that is something that I am seeing a shift in. And, yeah, I mean, I've actually I've reached out to my contacts again and
yep.
and started tapping them and seeing what I could, do.
Well, Tamara, that's another thing you mentioned in your book. Keep reaching out. Go back and start all over again.
Absolutely.
So.
Absolutely. I mean, a lot of what I talk about is, you know, how do you make sure that the job is going to be right for you? But in terms of finding them, I think one of Gen X's strong skills is that I have been consistently impressed with the number of contacts and networks that most Gen Xers have maintained, and this is the time to use them.
Definitely.
One thing you can do on Indeed.com, I don't know if you've noticed this, but beneath each search result, there's a link that says more, and if you click on that, you can actually, there's another link that takes you to your Facebook or LinkedIn accounts, and you can actually see everybody who works at that specific company, who is in your network, who you're connected to. So we try to integrate some of these social networking services to help people use Indeed to access their networks. But I think the point that Tamara, you were making about being inventive and imagining a job perhaps that doesn't exist, I think that mindset is very powerful even when you're applying to a specific job.
Mm-hmm.
So try to think about how you could add value to that job, how you would actually do that job if you were in, if you'd already been given that job. Take a creative approach to thinking about how you would do that job, rather than just answering questions in an interview.
Araya, thanks for your call. I really appreciate you participating in the show today.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Take care.
You too.
Let's get to a couple other calls. We have a few more minutes. Kate, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you doing?
Fine, thanks.
I had an observation, I guess a small question. Something I noticed that a lot of my peers, people in their early 30s, are suffering from is that they're still looking for that perfect job or something to fulfill them. It's what we're told when we were growing up, that we're supposed to have a job that, you know, makes us absolutely happy. Is there any point at which, I guess, it's okay just to say it's a job, and it's just a job, and you go to it, and, you know, you can be fulfilled outside of your job and be completely happy? Because there's just this sort of aura of depression and desperation hanging around a lot of my friends. Now, luckily, I have a job that is both artistically and financially fulfilling, but, you know.
Well, gosh.
I know. It's a struggle. It's a struggle for a lot of my very, very close friends.
Yeah. I don't know. Tamara, what do you think?
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
I guess I would say no.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I don't think you should settle for just a job. You know, that feels like settling for just a marriage or I don't know. I'm not a big on settling. I think you want to continue to strive. Now, there may be an element of what Paul spoke about in terms of, you know, would there be a way to take your current job and make it somehow more fulfilling? Would there be a creative element you could add to it? But I wouldn't give up trying.
Okay. I kind of, you know, as the person who everyone you know, comes to see all the time. I have no idea what kind of advice I should be giving them. Like, hold out or just get a job or it's okay, any of those things.
Keep trying.
Okay, sometimes, thank you very much.
Sometimes you need to, I think sometimes you need to change jobs. And sometimes you just need to have a different attitude to the job you have or a different attitude to the employer you have and try to talk to your employer about changing your situation, changing your manager. I think there are many things you can do within your current job to change it and improve it. And then if that doesn't work, look elsewhere. So I think there's a lot of things that can be done other than just settling for an unsatisfactory situation.
Kate, thanks for your call.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
Take care. 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. I want to get this email in from Eric. He says, with the increasing mobility of the American population and job searches extending into all 50 states, how has teleconferencing interviewing influenced the modern-day job search? Anybody? Tamara?
I don't see too much of it myself, Paul. I'd be interested if you do. You know, what I have found that I found really shocking, personally, is more and more companies are doing group interviews. That's become very hot.
Gosh, that would be horrible for
me. Isn't that incredible?
Yes.
I'm not sure I know what a group interview is.
Well, they bring them in as six or eight people, and they interview them all at once. And part of what they're watching is how they interact with each other. Sounds horrible to me.
I think there's a better way to to label that activity, which is, in fact, we're doing on Tuesday an open house at Indeed in Stamford, which it is actually not a group interview, but there's an element of it which is getting to know potential candidates and for potential candidates to get to know us. And it's a two-way street. I think a group interview implies something that's very unidirectional.
Yeah,
I think having group sessions, open houses, areas where people can interact, and it's as much for the candidate to make judgments and assessments of the potential employer as it is the other way around. And I think they can be effective. They can be quite time efficient because you can, from the employer's point of view, you can actually meet a lot of people and have a lot of short conversations and learn a lot about a candidate in a more efficient way than the one-on-one conversations, which can be quite time-consuming if you have a large number of applicants.
I just have one more.
I think framed in the right way and organized in the right way and presented in the right way, those kinds of events can work. But the group interview sounds a little creepy.
Steve, you're on the air. Welcome to the show. We only have about 30 seconds, so I'm sorry to cram in at the end.
Okay, well, I support the guest who mentioned about the Gen Y's show no employee loyalty. Well, I don't think they should. I think they've got the right idea. Since employers do not show loyalty to their employees, why should the employees show loyalty to the employer? In a lot of cases, the employers, they have managers. They treat their employees like mushrooms.
Keep
them in the dark. I mean, in the basement and in the dark.
All righty. Thanks, Steve, for your call. Sorry to jam in it at the end. And that's all the time we have. I don't know. Does anyone want to respond in 10 seconds?
I think there's an at-will arrangement for most employment arrangements.
Mm-hmm.
So the individual is free to leave and move on, and the company is free to let people go. And I think that that's good. That creates a frictionless labor market, and I think it's balanced in the right situation. It isn't always balanced in practice, but I think that's the goal, is that people should be free to do what they want, work where they want, and companies should be free to employ who they want.
Paul Forster, Indeed.com co-founder, and Tamara Erickson, author of What's Next Gen X, thank you for joining us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.